Fred had a long life which he devoted to the service of Christ and the service of other people in ways which were eminent and distinguished and fruitful. We're going to hear about four of those areas now. First of all, I'd like to invite Stephen Adams to come and tell us about Fred and Northern Ireland. Stephen, who was involved in the Northern Ireland peace process with Fred.
This afternoon, I'd like to give you a glimpse of an aspect of Sir Fred Catherwood's life. He was an influential politician, industrialist and Christian leader, and known respect across Britain, Europe and beyond, far beyond. And yet in the midst of all that, to quote him himself, he spent over 25 years of his life shuttling back and forward, trying to edge two insecure minorities to an agreement in Northern Ireland. I'm quoting from his book, At the Cutting Edge, published in 1995. Many printed tributes have briefly referred to his involvement in the Northern Ireland political situation and to his desire to contribute to the peace process in the land of his birth. He fulfilled a unique role, more in discussions than in the limelight, but vital at key times. In his own writings, I quote, he says, "A good politician will bring out the best in us." And he did just that. At cutting-edge work, with quiet determination, not typical of many with his kind of Ulster Scots heritage. Thank you, Lady Elizabeth and the family, for this privilege of sharing in the service today. Sir Fred was born in Castle Dawson. And for those of you whose geography of Northern Ireland is not very good, it's in the south of County Derry. His earliest parental influence were Christian and non-sectarian. His mother's godly character and his father's astute business skills both came out of a pietistic, simple church context, and that influenced him from his earliest years. They were not sectarian or bigoted. His was an evangelical Protestant community, a definite minority in a primarily Catholic part of the country. And you know, this moulded him, even as a young person, seeking to understand the other person. His was not the typical rhetoric of a defender of the faith, out to protect and to confront. He spent, as I understand it, a very happy childhood in Belfast, went to local schools, and he loved going back to the family farm in Castle Dawson. At the age of 9, he made a profession of faith during a tent mission in the city centre in Belfast. And you know, from that day, and for the 80 years to follow, he had a living faith and a personal relationship with God as a saviour and friend. This moulded him and equipped him to take his real faith into the many places where his amazing life journey was to lead. Getting a good education mattered to his parents. They believed that a public school education in England, in schools with a Christian ethos, would be best for Fred. That education served him well, but, again I quote, "The independence of his Ulster background made him a nonconformist in a public school system." He resisted the pressure to conform to the mindset of such schools. So he looked forward to return visits and spent long periods of time in County Donegal, where his parents had bought and were running the Rosa Pen Hotel after their privately run bus company had been nationalised by the Northern Ireland government. And Fred quickly quoted, "and for many years made no money until his cousin took it over again." Just like C.S. Lewis, another distinguished Ulsterman, an academic, author and Christian apologist, Sir Fred never forgot his roots. Alistair McGrath says of Lewis, and I quote Alistair, "He never made his Irish roots into a fetish. They were simply part of who he was, not his defining feature." This was also true of Fred. You know, when, I hope I can say this, Elizabeth, when Elizabeth and he were going out together, she realised, and again I quote Fred, that behind the Cambridge accent was an independently minded Ulster Scot. In turn, writing about Elizabeth, he said, and I quote, I could never have had a better companion with me in most of my adventures. Sir Fred was a professional manager, a thinker, a debater, unashamed of his reformed biblical convictions, affirmed and strengthened over many years involved in Westminster Chapel. Yet he sought to build relationships of respect and trust in industry, with trade unions, in business and politics, and with people of faith. You know, you didn't have to hang your cap in the same church as Fred for him to respect you and to be encouraged by him. His reputation in leadership and his writings, and as an industrialist in Britain and Europe, was most impressive. We know of his knighthood in 1971. You may not know that the Queen's University of Belfast awarded him with an honorary doctorate in 1973. How do I know that? When he was at the front getting his honorary doctorate, I was amongst the masses getting my primary degree the same day. And in the afternoon, he spoke to all who were interested as the guest speaker to all the new graduates. In his challenging roles in the protracted peace process for Northern Ireland, he worked away, often in the background, influencing and advising. And you know, while he was Vice President of the European Parliament, he developed trusted personal relationships with Northern Ireland member MEPs. And this was to prove absolutely invaluable, particularly with Ian Paisley and John Hume. Many significant and influential conversations held at informal get-togethers, often with Elizabeth there as well, influenced later decisions at key times in the Northern Ireland peace process. Back in 1985, Fred was an interlocutor, talking to all the political parties who would talk to him. And from this he discerned, and I quote, what could and what could not be done about the province's future. He achieved the recognition that minority parties could block the majority parties. He realised there could be no return to the old Stormont and that there was a clear need for an elected assembly. Later that year, with this controversial signing of the Anglo-Irish Agreement and the resultant disaffection of unionists, he spent 4 years, and again I quote, in shuttle between governments and parties, greatly helped by MEPs from Northern Ireland and the Republic, to try to get something back on track. He worked to enable, and publicly spoke out for, a deal to be negotiated by the British government, directly with the Irish government, which would include cooperation between elected and accountable representatives of the Dáil and the Northern Ireland Assembly. By November 1993, when the Downing Street Agreement was signed, these elements were included in that agreement. And subsequently, we got both the IRA and loyalist ceasefires. Alongside this tireless work in a complex Irish political scene, he personally got involved in supporting the work of a small group of Northern Ireland Christians who became known as the Evangelical Contribution in Northern Ireland, ICONI. In 1988, they published a pamphlet, For God and His Glory Alone, appealing for gospel values to mark Christians' behaviour and challenging directly the appeal which was heard by others speaking out for God and Ulster. That mindset was one that Fred could not accept or condone. And therefore, he actively advised and encouraged. He facilitated meetings by these Christian leaders from Northern Ireland through ICONI with local politicians. And he supported them when they were very severely criticised for early discussions with Sinn Féin before there were any ceasefires. I'm pleased to say, as I now volunteer for that organisation and successor body, that in recognition of his Christian influence, both globally and nationally, and in the local situation, in Northern Ireland we hold the annual Calliwood Lecture in Public Theology. This was inaugurated in September 1988, and at the first lecture, Fred himself spoke on the theme, Faith in the Nation, looking at the relationship between the church and state. In concluding, I want to recall with gratitude my last visit to see Fred in September 2013. He was then in his second childhood. Sometime previously, Elizabeth had taken him back to Belfast to see his childhood home and his haunts. What a wonderful thing to do when your husband is not in good health and reminiscing more than talking contemporary things. When I went to the home to visit him in September, he immediately responded in a broad Northern Ireland accent once he heard mine. And he maintained that for most of the afternoon's conversation. I told him of the forthcoming Calliwood lecture, and his comment was, "That's good." And we reflected on Northern Ireland together. As I was leaving, he said to me, "You know, there's never a day I don't think about Northern Ireland. So I say to you today, and indeed any day, that you think of Northern Ireland and pray for its people, let's give thanks for Fred's involvement and influence. Much of it lives on 20 years later. And I want to say that even in the most recent Stormont House agreement, just agreed before Christmas, just after he went to higher service, key elements that he argued for are there. Today I want to assure you, Elizabeth, and the family, of our gratitude, love and prayers for this and so much more that you were able to do together as a family and as husband and wife in serving the Lord for his glory and honour.